everybody. Welcome to Is This a Ghost? I'm Clayton Smith, and every week I tell a real ghost story from real history to my real friend Patrick Dean, and he doesn't take it real seriously. And you can tell because, I mean, just look at it. Just look at that setup.
I take it seriously enough to call in on my day off, okay?
It's very good. It's very good. I'm grateful, and I'm sure everyone listening is as well.
Also, the IT solution to this is very convoluted for our listeners at home. I'm recording straight onto an SD card right now while talking to you on my phone, which hopefully this connection doesn't get fucked up.
Fingers crossed.
And then I have a tablet somewhere in my bag that I'm going to have to somehow get this file onto and get over to you at some point. So,
Or you're going to have to overnight me your SD card.
That's seriously something I was considering.
We have until Thursday to figure this out. Oh, boy. Well, thank you for setting aside time on your vacation to do this. How's it going so far? How is vacation?
It's good. It's good. No, nobody's too sunburned yet.
So that's good.
That's good news. Yeah, we had our annual extremely expensive dinner with three children that went as poorly as an extremely expensive dinner can go. So
now you said $20 plus hot dogs.
Oh yeah, it was a pretty fancy place. The food admittedly was quite good. I did really enjoy the food.
Now describe to me fancy hot dog.
Oh, like a hot dog, except instead of a bun, it's like a double thick piece of Texas toast sliced down the middle after it's been grilled. Okay. All Wagyu beef hot dogs. This place was on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives at some point, actually.
All right. So, where do you put it against the late, great Hot Dogs?
Not as exotic as Hot Dogs. Hot Dogs was
no ostrich hot dogs.
True, yeah. Hot Dogs was like the sausage itself was really the delicacy. Sometimes the toppings, but usually the sausage itself was packed with care, as Doug would always say to my wife. Mm-hmm. And this was more, every hot dog was the same, you know, the same high quality Frank, and it was the toppings that set it apart. So, you know, apples and oranges, but excellent. Very, very excellent. Loved it.
Well, good. I'm so glad. I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's just get into it, huh?
Should.
Let's do it. Let's see. Oh, let me. I probably have a sound here somewhere. Which board am I on? All right.
If you want to...
Ow, Christ. Oof. All right. I guess we're going. Joseph Shipley was born on December 4th, 1795, in Wilmington, Delaware.
Hey.
I don't think we've done a Delaware ghost yet.
I don't feel like we have, which is a shame because, you know, it's the first state.
Is that right?
It is. That's the name of, that's our motto.
Did you learn that from a quarter?
Was it?
Did you learn that from the back of a quarter?
I did. Yes, I did, actually.
It was the first state quarter they did, right? So when he was 18 years old, he goes to work at his cousin's counting house in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
So he's probably pretty fun at parties.
What do you do at work? Oh, I dig ditches. What do you do at work? You know, I cut people up, try and put stuff back together. What do you do? Oh, you know, one, two, three... Etc.
Etc. After a few years of that, in 1819, I guess he did a pretty good job. He was invited to. He left his cousin's employ, and he travels to Liverpool, England, as an agent for a local merchant named John Welsh.
Okay.
And I don't know exactly what kind of agenting he's doing for him there, but he does a great job at it. He stays on in England. And 3 years later, Shipley and Welsh start their own company called Shipley Welsh and Company.
when you come from a counting house background, you're not really being...
You're not the creative side of the agency.
Yeah, exactly. And then you realize the other guy is also not the creative side of the agency, and you realize, shit, we're both counting guys, aren't we?
But we are going to make so much money. Let's see. This company, Shipley Welsh and Company, engaged primarily in financing trade, okay. Particularly the shipment of cotton to England.
Okay.
Okay. So Welsh is in America. He's in Philadelphia. And then Shipley's in England, in Liverpool. Mm. And so he's facilitating the trade of cotton. So now we have Shipley, who's an accountant and making money off of slavery. So he's
right.
He's a, we're not going to be too sad about how he's spending his eternity.
These guys are all dead, and I'm glad.
Shipley becomes, he just like egregiously wealthy.
Mm.
He's got so much money. He has so much money that by the time he's 50, he already has a country estate in England, like a second mm-hmm. vacation home in England, but he's ready to retire.
Wow. Okay.
Which is pretty smart. He's getting out before the Emancipation Proclamation. That is going to have ramifications for his line of work. Mm. So that's pretty good for him. And he knows one thing for sure. He does not want to retire in England.
High cost of living area. Ooh, you know, Florida's just sitting right there. Very easy. Oh,
man. Boy, Florida. You wish. Let's see. He decides he wants to go back to Delaware.
Okay.
Yeah.
What I remember of Delaware seemed very low cost of living.
It seemed terrible.
It did. It's like, it was the first state and then, but not the best state, right? They never say first and best. They're like first.
No, it's first. Hey, we're number one in only one way is what they say. Yeah, and I think if you're living in England for like three decades, it's probably a good move because I think Delaware also seems very like damp and bad. So you're like, yeah, it's kind of a lateral move. So he's going to go to Delaware. So I don't know. This guy, he's got to get out more because mm-hmm. These are his two favorite places. But he buys a big plot of land outside of Wilmington, sight unseen,
mm-hmm.
72 acres.
Okay.
He has an agent go there and buy it for him. And in 1851, Shipley hires George Williams to design a house on that land. Excuse me. A house that he shall call Rockwood Mansion.
Oh.
Now, this Williams fellow had also designed Shipley's English country house, mm-hmm. which he called Wincote.
Wincote?
Wincote.
All right. Were people too confused by it? So he's like, fine, I'll just name the next one Mansion. It's okay. Nobody knows.
Would you like to take a stab at how Wincote is spelled?
Wincote.
Mm-hmm. Wincote.
Is there a U in it?
Nope.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm just going to go with the double N. W-I-N-N-C-O-A-T.
Pretty far off.
That's a shame.
W-Y-N-C-O-T-E.
W-Y-N-C-O-T-E.
Which is probably going to have... Sally McGregor is going to tell me it's called... It's pronounced wine... cart or something. But oh, this is so we talked a couple weeks ago about I'm buying a house,
mm-hmm. right?
And we should name it.
Sure.
Now we talked about naming it Murder Engine 2 or Son of Murder Engine, right, which is good. But I'm starting to think that maybe that's not classy enough. So I want to sort of put a call out to listeners. If you have a good name for my new house, I'm not going to show you my house because I don't want you to Google map it, reverse image search. You just have to use your mind's eye and just think of the kind of house that I would get and then tell me what you think we should call it. Maybe we will. Anyway, so Springer's, is that his name we're talking about? Yeah.
Yeah,
Shipley.
Yeah, Shipley.
Springer. What the fuck? Shipley's retirement home, Rockwood. It's going to be designed, like I said, by the same guy, and it's going to be in the rural Gothic revival style.
Okay.
I'm going to attempt to share a photo with you, which I don't know how well you're going to be able to see.
I can squint. I'll put my squinters on.
Your travel screen.
Oh, this house looks terrible.
You know what? It does. But here's the thing. So I was looking at this and I thought, well, this looks like it's falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
No, the stone is just looks like that.
Oh, that's stone.
It's like gray okay. stone. It looks like
all
that.
All right. It's the size of my thumbnail right now. So it's difficult for me to, you know, see.
It doesn't look texture. Like a nicer house when you blow it up. But it's actually, if you zoom way in, it's actually in quite good condition. Mm. It just looks like garbage. And also the roof needs some work.
Oh.
I don't think that modeling is meant to be there. I think that's some genuine rust.
Okay, fair enough. Well,
But everything else is pretty good. All right. So that's our boy. That's our house. Mm-hmm. That is Rockwood Mansion. Ooh. So at the time, the rural Gothic revival is the most up-to-date style. Mm-hmm. It's all the rage. And let's see, like I said, the estate is 72 acres, and so the views are magnificent. It's kind of up on a hill a little bit, and you can just see forever.
Okay.
And part of the reason you can see so well is because for the landscaping, they did a style of landscaping called like mixed something. I didn't write it down because it was pretty boring, but
mixed greens. Yeah, I know what that is.
Yeah, there's a little spinach out there, there's some arugula. What it means is it's mostly like wide open grasses with some walls.
Okay.
But mostly just like grass. Like think like Downton Abbey.
Like we want nature to be free and sprawling, but we also want to capture it sometimes.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. But the walls don't pop up. If you build a wall like a normal person builds a wall, mm-hmm. then it ruins your sight lines.
Right.
Because you're like, what if I could see over that 4-foot wall?
You want low walls.
That would be way better. You want low walls. And so they use a style of wall called a ha-ha. You ever heard of a ha-ha?
I've not heard of a ha-ha wall before. No, I have not.
All right, let me bring up the next picture for you.
Okay.
So down here is a normal wall.
Right.
Here's your deer. Here are you.
You don't want them here. Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. So you bury it.
You bury the wall.
Yes.
And this little ramp goes in here.
Yes.
So that if you're up here, you can see, and it looks like there's no wall.
Uh-huh.
But there is a wall.
I see this. This is kind of similar. The Biltmore Mansion has a similar layout where it's a like big sprawling areas with lots of walls, but they took the whole like garden area and sunk it down 6 or 8 feet and then built all the walls. So when you're in the mansion, you can see out forever. But if you get down into the shit there, then you can't really see too well.
Yeah, that's the poor person's view.
Exactly, yeah. The person
who's down from the bottom.
Yeah, I don't care about
that. Yeah, yeah.
Not my problem.
So that wall is called the Haha, and this is a quote. The name comes from viewers' surprise when seeing the construction.
Okay.
So there you go. So it takes 3 years to build this house. And in 1854, when Rockwood is done, Shipley packs up his things. He's in England. He packs them up, his favorite things. He packs up his favorite dog named Toby.
Mm-hmm.
His favorite horse named Branker.
Okay.
His favorite gardener named Robert Shaw.
You going with the horse, by the way.
Uh-huh.
Limited space. Limited space.
And is also his favorite housekeeper named Audrey Douglas.
Okay.
And he picks them all up and they move across the Atlantic to the new home, which is just north of Wilmington, Delaware. He also brought a lot of his furniture.
Makes sense.
I guess. I don't know. I would have burned it all to the ground and just bought new when I got there. That's a long way to bring furniture.
It's the new world. Furniture. It's a new world. It's probably not very good furniture at this point.
It's not that new.
I mean, have the Amish made it over here yet?
Gosh, let's see. Great question.
When I don't know about great Amish question, but it is a question.
Pennsylvania. Yeah, 1720s.
Okay. Well, maybe. There could be some good furniture over here. All right.
There's some good furniture. Okay. Some good style furniture. But you have to deal with the Amish.
So. Never mind. I'll just put more furniture on the boat. It's okay. I don't want to have to deal with that.
So anyway, so he brings it all over, and things are great. And Shipley dies in the house on May 9th, 1867.
That's that.
No word on the dog.
Oh, well.
But he probably eventually dies, too.
I would figure.
Rockwood Mansion is then passed on to Shipley's great-nephew, Edward Bringhurst, Jr., Now, Bringhurst moves into the manor with his wife, Anna, and their three younger children, Mary, Edith, and Edward. They also bring two dogs. Names redacted. I don't know what their names are, but they had two dogs. Now, they also, the Bringhursts also had an older daughter, Elizabeth Bringhurst Galtsmith, who was known as Bessie. And Bessie did not move to Rockwood with the family because she was married and living in a castle in Ireland at the time.
Mm.
She decided that was better, whatever dad's got going on. But Bessie did visit pretty often, and she was responsible for most of the decorative features of the mansion while the Bringhursts lived there.
Hmm.
Now, eventually, Bringhurst dies, and he leaves the mansion to Mary, who is his second child.
Okay.
But the first child who lives in America.
Okay, yes. Makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're the only word on the two dogs.
The only one willing to live in Delaware gets the house.
It's pretty strange to pass it to a daughter and a second daughter at that, but those other kids, they would not hear of it. So he died, but no word on his two dogs, what happened to them. So Mary's in charge of the house now, and some people start calling it the Lilac House.
Mm-hmm.
Because Mary is very fond of lilac perfume.
Ah, okay, mm-hmm. Yeah. The yeah. appearance of the house does not scream lilac. The appearance of the house screams
no.
falling down yes. stones. Yes,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Screams dead flowers for sure. Mm. But she was very fond of the perfume, and you could smell it anywhere she walked through the house. Mm. So they call it the Lilac House. Mm. So Mary's living there, and she's there for a good long while. She lives there until 1965.
Wow.
When she finally dies at the age of 100. When Mary dies, she leaves the estate to her niece, Nancy Sellers Hargraves. These are all some rich-ass white people names. Nancy Sellers Hargraves, who in turn leaves it to an unnamed nonprofit.
This is when the house got expensive. That's what it sounds like to me. Like, oh, I don't know.
Oh, thank you.
The plumber was just in here. And he said this is all lead pipes. This is just getting too expensive for me. So
needs a new roof now. Mm. Now it needs a new roof. Mm. Now, no. Mm. Mm,
it sounds like it's the Red Cross's problem now. Bye bye.
She leaves it to a nonprofit. Quote, for the enjoyment of present and future generations.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the fucking gall of people to be like, we know people are going to want to enjoy this house for generations to come. And that was a quick turnaround. Mary, let's see, because Mary died in 65, mm-hmm. and the house turned over from the nonprofit to Newcastle County in 1973,
okay.
just 8 years later. So, yeah, Nancy had it for like 3 seconds. She's like, I don't want anything to do with this shit. Let's see. So she wants to go. Let's see. Where are we here? Oh, now when she donated it to the good folks at the nonprofit,
mm-hmm.
they said, well, is there anything that we should know about the estate? Any like special quirks
mm-hmm.
or anything? And Nancy's like, no, I don't think so.
Definitely not
really.
Roof is fine.
No.
Roof's
pretty good.
Don't even need to ask about the roof. Roof's okay.
Water pipes are fine. Water flows through them. Great.
I think
they're updated.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. And the basement, a little damp, but no standing water. So,
No.
Things are good.
No, just actually, one small thing. There is a pet cemetery.
Oh, okay. Do I have to disclose that? That's a disclosure thing. Has to be.
I ask mm-hmm. when I buy a house, I say, listen, I don't know if it's not on the realtor.com listing, but is there a pet cemetery on this property? There's a pet cemetery, so all these dogs have been dying,
mm-hmm.
And you got to put them somewhere. And so they've been burying. There's a special part of the land where that's where you put all the dogs who go mm-hmm. down.
Absolutely, all the good boys,
and all the good girls go under the ground. And let's see. So there's a pet cemetery, but other than that, she's like, I think there's nothing else weird.
Okay.
Except for the ghosts.
Oh.
Bye. So the mansion's today, the mansion's paranormal coordinator has identified 28 individual ghosts at Rockwood Mansion.
I want you to tell me what graduate program you go through to get that job. I really want to know.
It is got to be a program sponsored by like A&E. I don't know. It's the Robert Stack School for paranormal nonsense. So they have a paranormal coordinator. That's his real position. Mm-hmm. His name is Rick Lovelace. And Rockwood is now a museum. And not long after the museum opens, guests start complaining about all the goddamn ghosts running around the house. And so Lovelace was already working there at the time. I think he was a tour guide at first.
Mm-hmm.
And as he says, he was a, quote, staunch skeptic.
Hmm.
But after he witnessed so much otherworldly phenomena in this house, he became a true believer. And when people started complaining about ghosts, he said, well, it sounds like we need me to be a paranormal coordinator. And they said, what does that do? And he said, oh, let me show you.
They're probably like, no, there's really no, there's no promotion opportunities here. It's, you know, kind of a very flat management structure. And he's like, what if I just created a position?
Now, the salary is going to be high, but let me tell you, it's worth, if you Google the average salary for paranormal coordinator, you'll find actually it's pretty reasonable for the market.
If you go on Glassdoor, I think you'll see competitive salaries are in the six-figure range.
Mm-hmm. You want a good one, because a bad one, that's going to turn the tide real quick at that house. It's going to turn that psychic energy the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. And then we got to, then there's seances, and we'll have to burn the whole thing down.
Plasma eventually. Traps. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, you don't want that. So it's really an insurance policy for you. So let's see. What does he do? He has all sorts of great ghost hunting equipment, like EMF meters. He's got thermal cameras. Mm-hmm. He has ghost boxes. Which are the ones, of course, as you know, that that record supposedly the sounds of ghosts talking.
Yep.
And he has dowsing rods.
Of course.
For the wet ghosts. that's for the basement ghosts. As you noted, there is quite a lot of moisture down there. So now most of the 28 ghosts, they don't actually know who they are because it's a lot. But some of them, we do know who they are, who they were. First of all, first and foremost, most importantly, there are several ghost dogs who prowl the property. And we're pretty sure these are the ghosts that belong to the dogs who live there.
Okay.
Best guess.
I still don't understand, like, what dog would have unfinished business? Like, I can't think of a species of animal on Earth that would have...
I think for dogs, it's like... You have to die in that sweet spot of like, you're only going to remember some unfinished business for 3 seconds. If you die in that 3 second window, you're fucked. But if you can like make it three steps away from that, where you think that bone might be buried, you're fine. You're fine.
Or like you're a dog, you're upstairs in the house and you hear kibble hitting the bottom of the empty bowl and like you run down the stairs and you break your neck.
Yeah.
That, I mean, that's
didn't get to eat that kibble.
Instant ghost. Instant.
Here's one.
Ghost.
What about this? You're a dog. Mm-hmm. You're out in the yard.
Right.
Having a blast.
Absolutely.
You're sniffing around.
Totally.
Something. So you're leaping down these ha-has and you're just like, life is fucking great.
These walls were built for me. I swear to God.
You're running around and suddenly you smell someone. There's a bone somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You're really excited. That's your whole jam.
Mm-hmm.
So you go, you use your nose, you go follow it to the spot and you're digging up the ground and you find a bone and you pull it out and you're so excited. You're playing with it. You're chewing on it.
Mm.
But then you realize, oh no, this bone looks familiar. Oh no, this is a dog bone. This is the bone of a dog.
Oh,
this is another dog. And then you think, are there more bones of dogs down here? Or is this a standalone event?
Mm-hmm.
And so then you dig more and you keep digging and you find more bones of more dog bones, more bones of dogs. And you start pulling them out with your mouth and you start setting them out on the ground and they're forming a skeleton.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're panicked, and you know you should stop. But you're way too deep in it. And so you keep going because you can't stop yourself because you love bones, but also you have to figure out what's going on. Why is there a dog skeleton? And you find some bones and you keep digging. You find more bones. And one of the bones is a rib bone and you put it with the other rib bones. But then you see, wait a minute, there's too many rib bones now. That's an extra rib bone. Does this dog have an extra rib bone? Or... are there multiple dogs here? More dog skeletons.
Mm.
So you keep digging and you keep digging. It becomes your life's work. And you're digging constantly. And you're finding all these bones and you're setting them up and you're making all these skeletons in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like 3.5 skeletons through. And suddenly you're so worked up about this. You have a heart attack and you die. And you didn't get to unearth all the dog bones. And you certainly never got to figure out what sort of sadist killed dogs and buried them in the backyard.
In irony of ironies, you are now buried in the backyard and you become a dog skeleton.
That's how you become a powerful dog ghost. Most powerful. So I imagine that probably happened to at least two of them.
It has to be. Yeah. I mean, how else do they all get there? Really?
Yeah. And then one of them misjudged the ha-ha and just smashed his head right into it. Never got that jump. Anyway, where were we?
Don't know.
Oh, one time two dog ghosts appeared floating up in the air outside a second floor window.
I bet they were panicked as fuck. I bet they did not like that.
There's also a man in a red smoking jacket who wanders through the house, just completely oblivious to everyone. And this one we know, he is Joseph Shipley himself.
Oh, he's a ghost.
He's a ghost. Yes, he's a ghost. Yeah, he is. He did die for real. That was not a fake out. It's this 200-year-old crypt keeper wandering through the house. That's Joseph's ghost. His great-grandniece Mary, the one who lived there until she was 100, she's also there. You don't see her very often, but it's very common for visitors to walk through spots in the house that suddenly smell like lilac perfume.
Oh, it's nice.
Sure, it is nice. Apparently, all the ghosts in this house are, none of them are malevolent.
Oh, okay.
They're all just pretty fun. They like to play pranks.
It's a very sitcom group of ghosts, what it sounds like here.
Yeah, I think it's a good sitcom group of ghosts.
There's a CBS sitcom about this, right?
Even though one of the ghosts is called the Shadow Man, which sounds like it would be a scary ghost, but apparently they're all good.
Could just be like a blues musician. You don't know.
Hey, man. Thanks for coming. Lovelace says that one visitor became alarmed when, quote, when all watched her hair get lifted right into the air. I'm guessing probably just the ends of it, but maybe the whole thing. Yeah. I don't know. He says several guests have taken group photos that have included a ghostly presence dressed in period clothes who is not actually there. There's also a lot of footsteps, knocking, whistling, and whispering. A writer for Delaware Today named Ashley Breeding went on a ghost tour through Rockwood Manor just last April in 2024, which was led by Loveless. She said that in the attic, where it's usually just very, very warm and stuffy,
right,
she felt several ice-cold blasts of air. Ooh. And she assumed it was a window or an air conditioning vent or something, but she inspected very carefully, and there was no such opening present in the room. When Breeding and her group went to the basement, she took some photos and noticed light orbs in the images. Now, she assumes they're just dust particles. And here's a quote from the article. But those only float upward, Lovelace explains.
What?
Yeah. Did you know? Dust particles only float upward. That's how you know if it's a dust particle or a ghost.
I don't think that's if it's true.
Yeah, dust goes up. You've seen the Avengers movies.
Yeah, I've
all goes up.
Yeah. Like when you, like in your home, when you dust the ceiling in your home to get all the dust off of it. Yeah. I remember that. Sure.
Yeah, it's up.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's why it's so stupid to dust ceilings. Aaron, leave me alone. So I don't know about that one. And then Breeding also says that her friend Bree, who was also in the group, heard the phrase leather mini on the ghost box.
Okay.
Now, Bree is that may mean nothing to you, Patrick.
Next to nothing. Right.
But Bree is a handbag designer who works mostly with leather. So
there you have it. So has to be. Have it. So, that's a ghost right there.
So that's a ghost.
Yep.
During that visit, Lovelace also used his dowsing rods to detect ghosts. The group sat in a room called the Black Parlor, and Lovelace held these two rods out in front of him, parallel to each other, straight out. And he said, if there's a spirit here tonight, please cross the rods. And Patrick, you are not going to believe this.
What?
The rods crossed into an X.
No.
They did.
Choof.
Now you're probably thinking Lovelace did that.
Yeah, I mean, for a moment. Yeah.
No, that was a ghost.
He says no.
He says ghost did that.
Interesting. Did anybody contact scientists about this?
I think he is one. Let's go check his title again.
Sure.
Sure. Paranormal coordinator. Yeah, that's in the science. When our graduate degree program for paranormal coordinator at Mary Baldwin is definitely in the arts and sciences. Maybe more arts than science, but it's in there.
It's more of a dark arts and science degree.
Let's see. From Breeding's article again, quote, during a previous visit around Christmas time, we had followed Lovelace into Shipley's former bedroom. As we entered, he, Lovelace, gasped. I was just in here and these Christmas tree lights were not on, he said, searching for the switch to turn them off.
This guy, by the way, is killing it as the paranormal coordinator of this place.
He is earning that salary.
Absolutely for sure. Killing it. I cannot wait for the next season of White Lotus because it's going to star this guy. And I am going to watch every second of it.
Let's see. At the opposite side of the room, the door to a dressing cabinet with a secure latch was wide open, revealing Shipley's clothing, which is still there. And this was closed, Loveless said. Oh, wow. Now, again, you may be thinking, I'm not sure this is legit. You might have staged this. However, the article goes on to say, to shut it, he had to wrestle with another Christmas tree blocking the path to the dresser, a clear sign that it was not a human, at least no longer, who'd opened it. And if you can't trust journalists, I don't know who you can trust. So that is the story of Mary and the Mysterious Men who haunt the Rockwood Mansion in Wilmington, Delaware. Yeah. It's rare that we get someone like an expert really kind of walking us through everything.
Yeah, it's helpful, really. You know, we don't have to like make up a lot of the story because he's already done that for us. So
This was very easy on the note taking. Yeah. It's all right there.
We should really see if he wants to come on the show sometime.
Surely he would.
I'm certain of it.
What's his name? Richard Loveless. I'm going to email him right now. Let's compose an email to Richard. We got time. Let's see. Oh, Rick Loveless. Not Richard. He's not so formal. I'm going to say contact Rick Loveless at Rockwood Mansion. There's no site, no page on their website where you can do that. Let's check LinkedIn. Apologize to Jeremy and Jen for having to cut out some of these. What is my LinkedIn profile? I don't know. All right, hold on.
Two-factor authentication. I really need to get into LinkedIn right now, guys. I'm sorry.
I didn't know we were going to be using LinkedIn for this episode. I should have assumed. This is going so badly. Maybe we won't do this today. This will be an off-camera project.
Yeah, I think so. Definitely a little... Definitely something for the follow-up to this episode.
Yeah, I think if you and the girls are looking for fun vacation adventures, you could spend some time working on a letter to Rick Loveless.
We should really have like an Unsolved Mysteries update at the beginning of the next episode.
Oh, yeah.
Where we have Rick Loveless. Yeah, I'm sure there's a button on there. That's it.
No. Yeah!
Which one? It's booty time.
Yeah, it's that one. There we go. Yeah, there it is.
There we go.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
We'll bring Rick on next week. It'll be fine.
Yeah, we definitely won't forget either.
No, absolutely.
So, tune in next week to figure out what we sent off in an email to Rick Loveless. That'll get him on the show. Maybe he'll even be on the show. Maybe it'll go fast. So here's hoping. Anyway, that is going to do it for us. Thank you so much for listening to Is This a Ghost? It's a production of Smith Show Media. All the notes are taken by me, Clayton Smith. All the funny jokes were from Patrick Dean, who is on vacation. Our audio editor is Jeremy Montoya. Our video editor is Jen Swanson. Our social media team is Kai Valonis, Jen Jones, and Sam Murdoch. And our merch is handled by Fox and Quill Studio. And I don't know. Don't get dogs, because they'll eventually become ghosts. And then you'll be part of the topic next week. Is This a Ghost?